ABCNA. And just as we have 12 steps and 12 traditions, which has given us a new way of life, I hope this 12th convention gives you another piece of that gift that we call life. And I've asked my friend Kermit to come introduce our speaker tonight.
Y'all look awesome. Hey, Mom! My name's Kermit Lemon Addict. And, well, thank you much. We need to be loved. When I came down to the local committee about a month ago, the program chair was there and said that told me who the opening speaker was and said that they needed someone to introduce them, and I grabbed him around his neck and said, "Let me do it," because they didn't ask me to do any workshops, so I just had to get up here at the podium. That's right. I hold this gentleman in the highest esteem and regard, and I consider him a very dear friend of mine, even though we only see each other once every year or two. But when we do, our hearts meet because he's that kind of a man. I have a lot of respect for him, and the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous owes a great deal to this gentleman, a great deal. And now, when in sitting around talking with him one night, we were chatting about when he first came around, and he was in his understanding, was one of the first people that was an addict. That addiction was his problem, and that was his understanding of it. He was also one of the first people to come around Narcotics Anonymous with a car. And a three-piece suit. And that's how he came to his first meeting. It's a program of attraction, right, Greg? Terror, right? But we hide it so well. Another time we were sitting around chatting, and I picked up the pamphlet Triangle of Self-Obsession, and he said, "Yeah, I wrote that one day when I was in the middle of a triangle of self-obsession. I had nothing better to do." Greg has given us a great deal of literature, and has always been a strong proponent of literature in Narcotics Anonymous, and he's one of the driving forces that brought us a basic text. And with that, I'll give you our friend Greg P. from Texas.
Something, and that's to take another moment of silence. I figure if I don't do that, my voice will give out. And when I first started asking for that, you see, the reason it was is I was going to, be real quiet and ask my higher power and say, I hope they like me, hope they like me. And now I just ask to try to be honest. It's much more comfortable that being honest than being liked. So if you will, a moment of silence. Thank you, God. I've had an interesting day today. I stopped at the instant teller on the way out of work this morning, about 12:30. And got out, got a few dollars out of the instant teller, got back to my car, and realized I'd locked my keys in the car with the engine running. And I was out there standing in the rain, trying to figure out what I was going to do next. And about an hour and a half later, I managed to pop the lock on that car and got back in soaking wet like a drowned rat. And that's kind of like what it's been like today. I had a good drive up. I'm glad to be here. Roanoke, Virginia. This is a very special place to me. Roanoke is a place that is very near and dear to my heart. The last time I was in Roanoke, which was probably about 4 years ago, somewhere around there, I was as excited as I've ever been. I had a dream going, and it was a wonderful dream. And I found a piece of property up in Floyd County, up on the hill, and was going to start a retreat center for us, a place where we could go. And it was an exciting time. And I had to go back to Atlanta, where I was living at that time, and to get monies out of where I had them, and with a brokerage firm, to come back up here to deposit and to open a bank account to really do something, to really have the fulfillment of a dream. Of course, this is with, I don't know, 19, 20 years playing, something like that. I got down to Atlanta and I found out that I'd been ripped off for everything, and that I lost everything. And I spent a year insane trying to fix that. Phone calls and nasty letters, and you know, didn't want to bust them because I figured if I bust them, then they wouldn't pay me the money back. And after a year, I was so crazy I had to walk away from it. See, because my life was more important than any $100,000. My life was more important than that dream. And that's kind of what it's been for me. No, things like that don't happen to people with long-term clean time. That's not true. I'll share some neat things with you that happened in my recovery. There's plenty of wreckage of the present, I tell you. Using was bad enough. Staying clean has been a trip. Anyway, let me get back. I'll tell you how I got here shortly, briefly. It's the boring part. It's you know, what I really want to get to talk about is the steps a little bit. Because I have had a new, or a resurgence, or an increased awareness of some of the steps, and I've changed the way I look at them somewhat in the last couple of years. Out of, you know, dire necessity and lots of pain. But as a result, I have a better program today than I did 2 or 3 years ago. I started using when I was a kid, and I honestly don't know exactly when. I was 6, 7, 8 years old. I started taking Diet Cokes. And I loved them. They were wonderful. And I loved them so much that by the time I was 10 years old, I was taking uppers, downers, and tranquilizers every day. And I loved them. Never had to feel nothing except what came out of a bottle. Didn't have to feel. I could be who I mean. I'd hoard this pill and I'd hoard that pill and I'd go to the medicine cabinet and take these pills and I'd do that. And it was all legal and perfectly fine. And, you know, my mom encouraged it and the doctor encouraged it. And, you know, it was neat. You know, take your medicine. Okay. She didn't know I was cheating on her. And it was good. It was good. I got patted on the back for, you know, medicating myself. I got in high school. I found out there were other drugs, and I did what every single one of us did. I used them as long as I could stand it. Pretty much everything I could get a hold of.
I can't hear you in the back.
Can't hear me in the back, okay? I'll see if I can do something about that. I'll try to talk louder, too. I have been in and out of flu, cold, kidney infection, whatever, for the last couple of months.
whatever it is the kids keep bringing home, I tell you.
Oh, God.
I keep getting it. And so my voice may give out a little bit, and sometimes I talk real low anyway. But that's all right. I'll try to talk loud. Got into high school, I found out there were other drugs, and I loved those too. Because the pills had kind of quit working by then. I smoked the Gilgrass, and I popped a few pills and shoved morphine suppositories up my ass. Just the regular stuff. Went away to college, and I found out there were other drugs. and I did a lot of LSD, and I ended up coming to Narcotics Anonymous. The last year of my using was terribly painful. My girlfriend and I gave a child for adoption. My grandmother died. My best friend hung himself. And I found myself hating myself and loathing myself a little bit more every time I did it to myself again. I hated myself. I'd realized I'd had that time that I realized that it wasn't okay to be who I was. But this wasn't how it was supposed to turn out. That heart-wrenching, devastating time. For me, it was sitting backwards on the toilet like I did about half the time. Trying to get a vein. Dripping blood on the floor. Going, God, look what's becoming me. I didn't start out to be an ant. I just wanted to be loved. That's all I wanted. All I ever wanted was to feel okay. And I tell you, I want to feel good, right? And I was 7 for okay. All I ever wanted as a little kid was to be loved. And for whatever reason, and I don't lay it on anybody, I didn't feel like I was loved. I knew I was loved. It's kind of like knowing what I should do. That I was loved and feeling like I was loved are two different things. Knowing what I should do and feeling like that's what I want to do are a lot of times two different things. One of the changes that's come about in the steps, we hear that, insanity is repeating the same mistakes expecting different results. I guess that's true. That's called denial. That's a good definition of denial. When you do something and deny the experience of your past and you're expecting different results. What I've learned in the last few years is insanity is also repeating the same mistakes, knowing what the results are going to be. Go ahead and do it anyway. Consciously choosing the self-destructive path. And that's really crazy. And I've done a lot of that. One of the most obvious ways that I've done that is with food. I came to the program in Narcotics Anonymous, and in my first 2 years, I gained 180 pounds. And over a period of 15 years or so, I lost most of that. I was a little overweight, but I wasn't grossly overweight. 6 years ago, I guess now, something like that, I stopped smoking. Guess what? Blew up like a balloon one more time, I was in Atlanta at the time, and 4 days off nicotine, I was driving home from work one day, and I was going, I think I'll ram this car next to me. I made a conscious decision to do that. And I started talking to myself as I do, saying, Greg, this is crazy. You can get hurt doing this. What you need to do is go home and get your gun and blow somebody away. Sometimes I wonder how much violent crime is done under the influence of nicotine withdrawal. Certainly I was very capable of going to a bell tower with a gun. But I did, thank God. That's that same. And how did I cope with that? The same way I coped with not using. I started shoving shit in my face. And I got ripped off for all that money in the dream. And how did I cope with that? Yes. One more time. And I moved to East Tennessee to be director of an adolescent treatment program. And 90 days later, they said, we changed our minds. And I was out of work for 14 months. How did I deal with that? Same old, same old. But the last two times, I made a conscious decision to do it. I said, you can always eat, Greg. And that's insane. That is consciously choosing the self-destructive path. That's one more time going for what I know will destroy me. And I do that. I know you do too. And that's something that I need to think about, and I hope you can think about too, consciously choosing the self-destructive path. Repeating the same mistakes, knowing what the results are going to be. And going head on anyway. Probably the most common area we do that in is relationships. I like to talk about relationships, and I haven't talked about relationships the last few times I've talked, but I'll throw this out. I believe that I'm not one of these people I have a marriage that has survived Narcotics Anonymous. I have been married longer than I can think. The woman who had my child that we gave up for adoption in 1969, and I got married in 1970. In June of 1970. I got clean in October of 1970. I don't know which is more of a miracle. Sometimes I think staying married is more of a miracle than staying clean. I can understand staying clean. You know, those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean, right? You know, it's pretty upfront. They don't say anything about those who keep coming to our meetings, you know, stay married. I don't know about that. And I'm not the type, you know. We got two more kids, by the way, and we even like each other. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. We like each other. We're still best friends. We'll still enjoy each other physically, mentally, and spiritually. Yeah. And we were kids, you know, we were like 23 years old. I was 23 years old. Half my life. Oh, I've been clean half my life. Isn't that a trip? All right. This year. Wow. Not only have I been clean half my life, I've been an NA member half my life.
Yeah.
That's good too. You know, in some ways, that's something that is just so far beyond my comprehension. You know, when I think about coming around NA in 1970, desperate. In terror, and what has gone between then and now, I lose track. It is very much overwhelming. Anyway, I was talking about relationships. I was going to talk about those. I am not a believer in no relationships in the first year. In fact, I think you damn well better have some. But I'm not talking about love affairs. We're not good at that. Sorry. I mean, we all thought we were good at that, but basically, I mean, we're generally, they're not too bad at sex, but love and relationship, that's the part we're not good at. And addiction is the antithesis of love. You know, one of the things I've learned about love is that love and obsession are mutually exclusive. And I can't be obsessed and love at the same time. There's no room for the love. My relationships, my love affairs were all based on obsession. You know, I wasn't the type of person that, you know, liked anyone for any length of time. That's not me. I mean, I didn't trust you. I mean, I didn't trust me. I didn't think I was lovable. I didn't think I deserved to be happy. I went about the business of selecting partners who would prove that no one would ever love me. And every relationship that I ever had prior to this one I lucked into, you know, was predestined to failure, because as soon as it started moving towards what I was so desperate for, I started sabotaging. And I'm drawn like a moth to a flame to absolutely the wrong partner. Because I'm looking for someone to confirm my low self-esteem. So, I never did that good. I don't pretend to do that good. I don't know why I'm still married. I know a lot more about love today than I did 23 years ago. And that's a much quieter thing. And it ain't what I thought it was. I think there are five relationships that we all need to get involved in the first year. The first one is honesty. It's something new and different. For most of us. First of all, cash register honesty. Don't lie, cheat, and steal. The tough part, that's the easy part. When I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I could not go in a store without stealing something. I was not a big time thief. I was one of these little petty thieves. Steal sunglasses, paperback books, candy bars, Christmas presents. Could not go into a store without stealing something. I learned how not to steal in Narcotics Anonymous. Over a period of time, that became a little easier. But there's another kind of honesty that's real, really a lot tougher. That's me getting real with you and letting you know who I really am. See, because I carry the dope fiend thing where if you really know what I'm like way down deep inside, there'll be no way you'd ever accept me. And I'm desperate for your acceptance. Because I don't have much of my own, particularly coming in the doors. Getting honest with you, getting honest with me, and then getting honest with you about who I really was, it was terrifying. It was something, you know, that I avoided at all costs. You see, because I got a secret. And I don't know if I usually share this or not, but sometimes I share it. I got a big secret that I don't want you to know about. That I would go to any lengths to prevent you from knowing. And that secret is, that way down deep inside of Greg, there's this little kid who doesn't know how to live, who's terrified, who's been faking it for 46 years, and he's vulnerable. Oh! You can hurt Greg, you can hurt that little kid in Greg without ever knowing it. Without ever knowing it. And I never wanted anyone to ever know that I was vulnerable. I didn't want anyone to ever know that I didn't have my shit together. Now, there was two things in my life that made sense. You know, the first thing was the drugs. They made sense. You take something, you either are, feel, or act better. I don't think it's good. The second thing was the idea that I could handle it on my own. That I was self-sufficient. And the first step just wiped both of those out. You know, first he had me admit I was powerless over my addiction. And then, if that wasn't bad enough, you know, I had to admit that my life had become unmanageable. That I didn't have any scam that was worth scamming. That I couldn't handle it. Anyway, second relationship. I think it's real, real important to become a part of. If you're sitting here checking Narcotics Anonymous out, you can do that for a while. It's okay. There will come a time you may have to make a choice. I believe that in order to make it, you got to make a commitment. You got to jump in with both feet. I can tell you when that happened for me. I came to my first meeting early in October of 1970. I used twice after that meeting. The first time I used was October 18th. I hadn't slept in a week, so I'd been clean a week. And I knew how to sleep. So I went and copped and slept. The second time I used was October 25th, 1970. And I picked up one of my using buddies and took him, taken him to a meeting and explained about this wonderful thing I'd found in Narcotics Anonymous. On the way home, they were going, this is bullshit. I'm going to get loaded. And I was going, you can't do that, because if you do that, I'll have to go with you. And you'll wreck my car. And I went instantly back into withdrawals, had trash fever like I'd never, ever had it before. I could not lay on a king-sized bed. I was shaking so bad. I never, ever wanted to forget that pain and misery. Somehow there's something very, very therapeutic about trash fever and withdrawal. Somehow there's something very, very therapeutic about being that crazy and that sick. Sometimes I wonder today, we're trying to make it so easy for each other to clean up, right? I don't know. If it had been easy for me to clean up, I don't know if I would have cleaned up. Because there were times when I didn't use just so I never ever had to do that again. You know, just like there were times that I haven't smoked just so I'd never ever have to go through that withdrawal again either. Right? And that's a reality. That has been a motivating force for me. Anyway, I had to become a part of it. That second time I used, You know, I backed myself out. You see, I came in like we all do, listening for the differences, right? I heard people talking about quarter-sized holes. Jack Whaley talked about quarter-sized holes drilled in his head after the shock treatments. Jack's dead, so I can use his name. He died playing volleyball on the beach of a heart attack with about 15 years clean, something like that. A happy man. A wonderful man. Someone who was very important in my early recovery. Anyway, Jack had gotten that, you know, had holes drilled in his skull to relieve the pressure of addiction. I think they call that tin panning or something like that. It's an ancient remedy. Somewhere around leeches, yeah, right. I heard people talking about finding Narcotics Anonymous on death row, and I'm going, whoa! As I was scared enough, I came to my first meeting. Kermit, you know, said I, you know, busted my little thing about the three-piece suit and all. The reason I was wearing a three-piece suit is I was scared to death of you. I mean, I was going to this thing called Narcotics Anonymous, and I knew about narcotics. I mean, I knew about drug addicts. I mean, I read about them in the newspapers, and I read Naked Lunch, and I saw Reefer Madness. And, you know, I knew about these horrible, horrible, horrible creatures called drug addicts. The subhuman type, you know, and I was scared, and I didn't want you to know who I was. Yeah, I was kicking a 2.5-year habit, you know, sick as a dog, 72 hours since I last used, you know, snot running down, you know, the whole nine yards, right? And they nobody knew, right? Nobody knew, so. I had to join in. Anyway, after that second time I used, it was kind of like that you know, get your attention sort of shit, you know, like the 2x4 upside the head. And I came back, and I'd worked my way to the back row, and I came back and sat in the front row going, this is my chair, you're going to have to fight me for it. Because I'm here, and I don't care if I fit into Narcotics Anonymous, and I don't care if you accept me real good, I don't have any more choices. This is where I'm going to be, and if you want me to go, we're going to go to the parking lot. And that's the kind of commitment I had to make. I don't think everybody has to make that kind of commitment, but I think everybody has to make a commitment. And from that moment forth, I felt like a part of Narcotics Anonymous. And that second relationship is called fellowship. Narcotics Anonymous is more than an hour and a half in the evening. How many people, is this your first convention? Whoa! I hope to take away from this convention a feeling for the love affair that is recovery. Because you see, it ain't just going to meetings and staying clean. There's an excitement, there's a dynamic love affair that we have with recovery. Or we wouldn't stick. There is so much more than just walking in the door as a newcomer feeling like shit. It does get better.
All right.
Of course, as it's gotten better, I've learned how to bitch and moan a little better too. Some of the things that didn't hurt at all back in my early days hurt like hell now. And I go, man, I can't stand it. And I can remember I used to pray for it to be that good. That changes too. The third relationship that I think is essential is called sponsorship. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor people. And I think that's important. When I first came around to Narcotics Anonymous, people just like you taught me how to be an NA member. Somehow I don't see much of that happening anymore. I guess it happens. I'm just not seeing as much. I was taught etiquette, meeting etiquette. I was taught things like, well, if you're in a meeting and someone's sharing, wait till they get done sharing before you go up and go to the bathroom. Stuff like that. I was taught that if you're going to talk to somebody in a meeting, take them home. you know, I was taught that if you're in a meeting and you're smoking a cigarette and you wanted to smoke a cigarette and the person next to you was already smoking, you waited until they got done so it wouldn't be too many people smoking at once for the people that didn't smoke. I was taught that you clean up the meeting room. I was taught you get there early and you leave late. I was taught that things like don't go to a meeting alone, because if you pick someone up, you get three meetings. You get the one on the way there, the one while you're there, and the one on the way back. People told me that stuff. People pulled me aside, Greg, and said, Greg, you don't say shit like that.